Welcome to episode one of It Takes a Village, a podcast for college-bound families by Olin College of Engineering's Admission and Financial Aid team. My name is Dan.
And I'm Alia. We're super excited to be here today with Beth Grampietro, Olin's Director of Wellness. We wanted to bring Beth in for our very first episode because A, she's hilarious and maybe my favorite person at Olin. And B, she's both extremely knowledgeable and keeps it 100 all the time. Getting ready to go off to college can be kind of stressful for not only students, but also their families, not to mention that mental health among college students is a huge topic of discussion right now. Beth, thanks so much for joining us. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Thank you for having me. I hope I can live up to being your favorite person at Olin, at least throughout this recording. So as Alia mentioned, I'm the Director of Wellness at Olin. I've been working at Olin College for about a year and a half, but prior to that, I've been in college health for 15 years now. So yeah, it's kind of my thing. And I'm excited to be here in your first episode talking about mental health as part of the transition to college.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So can you start by just kind of reflecting on what families might be potentially thinking about as they're navigating this whole college process, you know, as a parent and as a family in 2020?
I feel for the families who are navigating this process in 2020. It's going to be a range of challenges and a range of realities that families are dealing with, not to mention, obviously, families' financial situations may be in flux or, you know, have changed drastically since they committed to a college. There's a lot of challenges. So I think that I hope that parents listening to this are remembering that, you know, I'm sure your show is going to do an amazing job talking about the transition and talking with lots of different people at Olin about the ways that parents can help their students navigate it as the best way possible. But that it's a team effort and the parent is there to be the coach. And this is your student's life and their college experience and their the beginning of their higher education journey. And it's also a part of their life. And there's many more years to come after this. So kind of finding a middle ground of like, yes, it's a big deal, but like, let's all, you know, try to talk it through and be on the same page and be a team in decision making as much as possible.
Beth, what's kind of looking at the whole landscape of mental health in college, what does that look like? Are you finding that there is something particular that students are struggling with? Or, you know, is it coming from different places? And also, like, is it all bad? I mean, I think a lot of times what gets told to us are kind of like the bad things about mental health, but like, are there positives that are happening? Are there some changes that you've seen in your career?
Sure. So if you were to look at any of the data that's out there about the mental health of college students, the trends that are going to come up consistently just across the board, and this has been the case for years now, depression and anxiety are the two big issues. Sometimes this is because a student has already been diagnosed with clinical depression or an anxiety disorder, and they are managing that as they come to college. And some of it is situational and is related to the many transitions and stressors of being in college. Some of this is all very developmentally appropriate, that, you know, you come to college and you are finding out different things about yourself. You're challenged by being away from home maybe for the first time, or even if you are a commuter student at a local school, you're challenged by a change in your schedule and your priorities and kind of the way that you need to engage in your academics. College can also be a time that students discover things about themselves that maybe home wasn't the place for them to fully inhabit. Maybe things about gender identity or sexual orientation or faith and religious beliefs, like all kinds of things where it's a time of extraordinary change. So it's kind of not surprising that there are some mental health struggles. It's also, age-wise, the traditionally aged college student is also in kind of the place where some mental health and mental illness issues are commonly kind of discovered. like, I hate to talk about a, you know, a pretty significant one, but folks who are diagnosed with like a thought disorder, like schizophrenia, that usually emerges somewhere in the 18 to 25 range. So some of it is about the age group we're talking about. But I don't think it's all bad. I think that the nice thing about college, and I think we're going to talk about this in more detail as we get going here, is that this is also going to be a time that hopefully students have access to a lot of resources that are made available and convenient for them in a way that they may not be out in the wider world. When they get to be a college graduate with a job, it might actually be harder for them to access some of the resources they need. But more on that later. I think one of the other nice things about college is everyone is in the situation together, and that can sometimes be a real positive, because colleges in general, and I think societally we've done this too, but colleges have really done a lot of work and I think done a good job at challenging the stigma of seeking help for mental health issues. And so if you are on a campus where a lot of people are willing to say, yes, I go to the counseling center, or I have a therapist, or I take medication, or even something as simple as when I'm having a hard time, I am comfortable saying to my faculty member, hey, it's really hard for me right now because of these reasons. Can I have an extension? Can we talk about this? You know, there's, the more a place normalizes help seeking, the better. And I think a lot of colleges are really good at that. So that's a definite positive. But I also think more, you know, kind of more widely, and I want to touch on what's going on with the pandemic and other current events right now too. I think that our students are living in a time that is extraordinarily stressful. And I would have said that before this spring too. These are students who were born in and around the time of September 11th. So pretty much from the time they were born, there has been kind of the existential threat of terrorism and all kinds of violence. And whether that was really impacting them individually, it's in the ether. Like, we talk about it all the time, it's on the news. The Great Recession happened, you know, like there are all these things that their transition to college and then into the workplace afterward is going to be very different from those of us who are older than them. And they're really dealing, and then environmental issues, climate change as well. They are dealing with a lot. They are coming of age and becoming adults in a world that is really unsettled and really stressful and really hard in a lot of ways, even as it is also really cool and full of amazing technology and cool things at the same time. And then I know from my own experience at Olin and talking with colleagues at other institutions that the pandemic and the switch to remote learning has added a new element of mental health challenges for a lot of our students. It's hard for some of them. Surely some of them love being at home with their families too. And especially since this is for the parents, please do not take this the wrong way. They are probably happy to spend time with you too, but they miss their friends and they miss their campus community. You know, and unfortunately for some, home is not the best place to get work done, or, you know, all different things are happening that have made this semester in particular, I think, a pretty challenging one for everyone's mental health. So it's a long and rambly answer to say there are definite challenges. There are some bright spots. And I think the best thing, you know, we could talk about this too, like parents can help their students be aware of what resources are available and how to access them.
So can you talk a little bit more about what some of those resources are? Because I think when I think of that, I think, okay, maybe there's therapy or counseling or something like that. But what are, you know, what does the full range of these resources look like for students? And how do they actually take that step to take advantage of them if and when they need them?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So at Olin specifically, because we are very small, we don't have a counseling center on campus, but we work with a couple of different counseling providers in the area to provide talk therapy for our students. And there's also, we also contract with a psychiatrist who does medication management for those students who take medication for mental health issues. So our model is actually kind of unusual. First in that it's not folks on campus, and second in that we, through our student fees, we cover the entire cost of student visits with no limits right now. That system was set up ages ago, way before me. with an eye toward kind of saying, you know, we don't want there to be a barrier. We don't want students to have to worry about what their insurance covers or doesn't cover. Are there co-payments? All those questions are kind of off the table. We also cover transportation to off-campus visits. So we have some folks who come to campus and see students on campus, and then others who are at the practices office in Wellesley, and we cover transportation to and from. So for all in students, it is, in the sort of on paper kind of way, easy and barrier free, right, to access therapy. It is not always easy and barrier free in reality for various reasons. I mentioned stigma before. While I think that Olin is a pretty low stigma place in terms of mental health stuff, I actually think Olin students are very frank about mental health issues and talk about it all the time and are really comfortable. There are students who individually might be less comfortable, maybe due to what their culture and their family or their faith tradition or even just their friend group thinks about therapy, right? So sometimes students have to overcome that feeling of like, is this an okay thing to do? Do I even need this? Am I depressed enough, right? Like, there can be students who think like, therapy is for people that are like really bad, and I'm just a little sad that my boyfriend and I broke up. That's a reason, like, you know, that's a reason to go. Part of my job often is to talk with students who are kind of in that in-between spot, and they'll come to me and be like, you know, my professor told me I should come talk to you because they've noticed I've been kind of down in class, but I don't really think I need counseling. And we'll just talk through it. And I never make anyone go, because like, I'm of the belief counseling doesn't work very well if you don't want to be there. But, you know, I'll have a conversation with them about what it can do for them, what it might be like, and, you know, remind them that like, you can try it once. You can try, it might not be for you, the person might not be right for you. You might decide like, I want therapy, but this isn't the right therapist, and that's okay. I also want to acknowledge that counseling as a profession is very, in terms of the people who do it, are very white. And in our area in particular, very, a lot of women, it's a lot of white ladies. so they are great and very good clinicians, but I know it is a struggle everywhere for students of color, first-generation college students, low-income students, to find mental health providers with whom they connect around those identities and affinities. And that can be, and I also, students who are part of the LGBTQ community as well, to find a provider with a good level of cultural competency around those identities is really important. And we've been working on diversifying our provider pool over the past year for that reason, but there's still work to be done for sure. And I think that's something that, you know, even if you're a parent who happened to put on this and your student goes somewhere other than Olin, you might find these same challenges on other campuses and in other communities as well. But students are going to learn about these resources through orientation at the beginning of the year and through other communications from me, probably at Olin, and other student affairs folks. And on our very small campus, most people know something. Like, most faculty and staff know, even if they couldn't tell you exactly how to get to counseling, they know to send a student to me or to someone else in student affairs. And there's a really good system of being able to connect students to those resources they need.
That kind of leads me into our next question is, as a parent, if I'm far away, I'm not with my student every single day, what can I do to support them, to advocate for them in their wellness when I'm not with them all the time? What can I do? And also, what am I legally allowed to do as well?
I love this question. Best question. Okay, so that's really great. I think I would say to parents of students, especially new students, you're probably going to get at least one phone call from your student, probably in the fall semester, about how they hate it and they're homesick and please come get me because I don't want to be here anymore. You may not, but like, it's pretty common. I made that phone call like 6 to 8 weeks into my first semester of college. Do not go get them unless it's like a legit, like if they call and there's a legit emergency, that's a different situation. But I'm talking about like if your kid calls and they're just like, I have no friends, I hate it, everything sucks. don't jump in the car or hop on a plane and go get them right away. Listen, always listen. Like, the best thing you can do for your kid as they become a college student is be able to listen and do so in as non-judgmental a way as possible, and let them know that it's okay to call you and tell you whatever, and that you're going to be there to listen. So listen to the fact that they're homesick. Listen to the fact that they're struggling. Try to ask about what they've done about it already, which can be tricky because you don't want to be like, well, what have you done? Like, have you even tried? But, you know, kind of phrase it as like, okay, well, can you tell me about some things that you've tried to do to make friends? Or, you know, what kinds of strategies have you tried to, like, if they call and say, I'm feeling depressed and I haven't gotten out of bed today. Okay, well, can you get up and take a shower? Can we start with that one goal? So really trying to coach them through gently and just kind of say, you know, let's try a few things, and also remind them of things they've done before successfully. Like, maybe you have a student who's gone through some stuff like this at home when they were in high school. Maybe they went through a breakup. Maybe they failed a test, whatever, something that kind of knocked them down. And you can use that experience to say, remember when X, Y, and Z happened? You had a tough couple days, but then you got up on like day three and went back and you tried. I think also kind of setting some times to talk with them maybe a bit more frequently if they're struggling. That's something you'll hopefully do at the beginning of the school year, is decide, especially with a new student, well, how often are we going to talk? Are we going to talk once a week? Are we going to talk twice a week? Do we text every day? What's the deal? And you and your student will figure that out together and kind of manage like what the best thing is as they adjust to their schedule. But if they do call home and they seem like they're struggling, maybe it's more often. Maybe you say, hey, I'm glad we talked. You sound like you're okay, but I'm a little concerned. So I'm going to call you tomorrow. What's a good time? Let's make sure we talk. I love that you ask what you legally are allowed to do. well, you're legally kind of allowed to do whatever, you're their parent, but it's more about like, what is the college legally allowed to tell you, which is definitely a question parents have all the time. Parents may know about FERPA, which is the federal law that protects student records privacy. This is sad that after 15 years, I would probably say what the acronym stands for wrong, but I would, so I'm not even going to try. I will try. I think it's the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act is what it stands for, but if I'm wrong, edit me out later. but a lot of people misinterpret FERPA and think it means that if a parent calls me, I'm just going to like hang up. I'm just going to be like, can't talk to you. Bye. That's not really true. What I would do, just as an example, is if a parent called me and said, and this has happened many times at many schools, including Olin, hi, I'm calling about my daughter, Alia. She seems really down when I talk to her. I'm really freaked out. What can I do? Or like, do you know anything about this? And I might know and I might not know. I might not have ever seen Alia. She might not have come to talk to me, or I might have met with her already. But I wouldn't be able to say that without Alia's permission. But what I would say is, you know, I can't speak specifically about your student's case, but I can tell you that in cases like this, this is what we do. And so I can always give the parent, hey, this is how we typically handle this. And a parent can always call and tell me anything they want. And they can call and tell a student's therapist anything they want. Like, if you know your student is seeing a therapist, you can call and tell them stuff. The therapist can't tell you stuff without your student's permission. But sometimes that information from a parent can like put some dots together for us and help us support a student even better. But there's also, if you get to a point where you feel like your student is really struggling, you can have that conversation with them about, hey, would you be willing to give Beth or give your therapist permission to talk to me? And understand what that means, because if a student signs a FERPA waiver, which is a thing that students sometimes can sign so that people at the college can talk to their parents about specific issues, signing a FERPA waiver for a parent does not mean that I give the parent a daily update phone call, like at all. Don't expect that. What it does mean is that if Alia was a student and she signed a FERPA waiver and her family called me and said, hey, we just had a phone call from Alia. She's very upset. She's really bad day. Something is wrong. Then I would be able to have a conversation about that and say, okay, I've spoken with her too, and this is what's going on. So, and likewise, if a student ever signs a release with their therapist to give, either me or a parent permission to talk to the therapist, that does not mean that I get to know the content of their therapy visits. It usually means that I know Alia has been showing up for her visits regularly and she's doing okay, period. Like, that's the kind of update you get in most of those cases. So there is still some maintaining of the student's privacy while giving you a window in to what's happening. But I would really only recommend that if there's like a pretty serious issue going on, because part of your student's development in college is becoming a more independent person separate from you, which I know is hard. I mean, I don't know how hard it is yet because my daughter is only 5, but I'm, yikes, it freaks me out to even think of, I'm going to be doing this in like 13 years and it's terrifying. So it's going to be challenging. But I think letting them have as much independence as possible and acting as the coach and kind of being off to the side, giving suggestions, giving encouragement, and then also being ready to say, hey, I know my kid and some of the stuff they're saying on the phone or like the fact that they're not going to class is really concerning. I need to step in and talk to someone. And at Olin specifically, I definitely think, you know, if you call and talk to me or really anywhere else on campus, any other office, they're going to connect you to the right person and you're going to get some kind of answer and some kind of support, because we are a very small community that is, we really prioritize taking care of students and making sure they're connected in the right ways. So really the takeaway from this is like, if you're worried about your student and you want to make sure someone knows it, call me. Or call someone else on campus and say, hey, I'm kind of freaked out. And we'll do something. We'll start there and see what we can do.
Yeah, I remember having that come get me mom phone call my first year of college. She did not come get me. I thought it was very, very rude of her at the time. She was like, well, you can... you know, if you still hate it at the end of the semester and the end of the year, you can transfer. And I didn't transfer in the end, so.
See, your mom totally killed it and she didn't even have a podcast to tell her what to do. Way to go. That's awesome.
I'll have to tell her that. She'll be so glad to
totally, hear. Totally tell her that. Give her a high five.
Awesome. So Beth, as we're wrapping up, do you have any last words of wisdom for parents or anything you would like to share with them?
I think that, I mean, first of all, congratulations. You've parented this child all the way through high school and now they're going to college. That's awesome. Like, pat yourself on the back. You're doing great. I really think I would just reiterate that, like, your role now is going to change. It's going to be a challenge. You're all adjusting. You're all adjusting in the middle of the whole world adjusting to a lot of really big, heavy stuff. Be kind to yourselves. Have some patience. Have patience with your student who's probably going to annoy the crap out of you in a couple of different ways before they go away to college. And also just try to remember that you're on the same team. And that you can be there to help them without doing it all for them. And that's going to be really the biggest challenge of the summer before college and the first year is navigating that balance. It's kind of like if anyone still does the lost art of driving a car with a stick shift, it's that balance between the clutch and the gas, right? And if you don't do it right, the car just bucks everywhere and it's awful and then it stalls. So it takes practice to figure out exactly where that balance is, and that's going to be possibly tough, but you can do it. And just remember that the goal at the end of this is hopefully by the time they're graduating college, they don't move back into your house, maybe. Unless you really want to, because maybe that's your jam. I don't know.
Well, that's all great advice. And we really appreciate you being on with us. And this was really fun. And we hope that as we move forward, that we're able to have Beth on again. And we'll definitely be looking forward to opening up the space and talking a little bit more about many more things about the college admissions process.
Yeah, thank you so much. And to listeners, if there are topics that you want to hear about in the future or follow-up questions you may have about today's episode, Dan and myself will both put our emails into the episode description so you can let us know what you want to talk about.
And once again, we thank you for listening with us, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Thank you guys for having me. Bye.